This is Tom Fox, and I'd like to welcome you to Innovation in Compliance. In this podcast series, I will bring you interviews with some of the leading experts who are changing the way practitioners approach compliance. Although the name compliance is in the title, it's really about innovation. And I wanted to drive the conversation about innovation in compliance into the 2030s and beyond, with a focus on innovations for the compliance practitioner and the compliance professional. You want to learn how to bring your business into an innovative state and more innovative business solutions for compliance problems, issues, and concerns. This is the podcast for you. Innovation in Compliance is a production of Compliance Podcast Network. Today I visit with Stacy Wright, who is a multi-time entrepreneur. In her current endeavor, she is focusing on sustainability, but sustainability for all stakeholders, specifically including employees, in bringing employees into the production process. First, a message from the sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network this month, Ethico.
In the intricate world of ethics and compliance, each second is precious, and slow case closures are more than just delays, they're missed opportunities. Enter Ethico. Our solution revolutionizes case management, cutting closure times in half and turning every challenge into a chance for improvement. Imagine a workspace where efficiency and compliance coexist harmoniously. Don't just dream of faster resolutions, make it your reality. Visit ethico.com/CPN today to book a demo and dive into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance, and to try our free ROI calculator. Empower your team with the tools they deserve.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode. And today I'm absolutely thrilled to have with me Stacy Wright. Stacy, first of all, welcome and thank you so much for taking the time to visit with me today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
So, Stacy, we met, I guess, last month now at C-Suite Thought Leadership Retreat and learned a little bit about you and your business. Asked you if you could take some time to visit with me about it, and you graciously agreed to do so. So thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for the offer of being here. I enjoyed meeting you, and I'm excited to share space with you and your audience.
So, Stacy, could you tell us a little bit about your professional background?
I am an entrepreneur. I've had six businesses over the last 20 years and spanning all the way from service-based business in the insurance industry, all the way to product-based businesses with patented products. From scanned the market from 0 to 5 million, all of them are startups. And we've had great successes and great losses over the course of 20 years, as you can imagine, as an entrepreneur. So it's been quite a ride.
So what are you up to now?
So now I am actually, I'm still doing patented products. So I have a company called IP to Market that is a manufacturer of patented products. We bring ideas to life from the early stages of engineering the idea to all the way to patenting, all the way to design and manufacturing and building brands around those patented products. So that's one company that we have going now. The thing that makes that a unique company and where my heart lies and my passion is, and what we really want to talk about is where the juice is, the way we're doing business. And the way we're doing business is we are really focusing on not just profit, but profit is important, obviously, because we want to be sustainable, but also bringing in care and connection and compassion in all aspects of the business that we have. What that looks like for us is that we have childcare on site so our employees can bring their kids to work with them. We provide meals and food for our employees, and our managers are mental health coaches, where we actually work with each individual person to bring their potential to life. So it's like a human incubator, if you will, where we're really focused on bringing people into thriving. We live in a society that's, we've got a mental health crisis going on, and we're looking to solve that through the power of business. And that is where Heart Profit came from. So Heart Profit is a movement, and it's a community of business owners and business leaders and community leaders who care about bringing care and compassion and connection into the workplace so that we can solve some of these social issues that we're facing today.
And the reason I'm so intrigued and frankly love that idea is I also believe that you can actually change the world through business. And yeah. I do it in a different space, but it's the same passion that you have around your business. And in fact, I'm just going to read the tagline on your website, creating the future of business that combines profit and heart. I have to ask, where are you located?
We are in North Texas, just north of Dallas.
There we go. Another Texan. We always have to celebrate when we have a Texan on the podcast. So what are some of the products and services that you guys offer?
So currently, our first patented product that we're sending through the IP to market pipeline, if you will, is a product that's the world's first and only bathtub footrest for people whose feet don't reach the end of the tub. So I had a friend who I was telling her about how we can change the world through business, just exactly what you're saying, is that businesses solve problems and we can solve our social issues if we implement different business practices, and we can make it sustainable and permanent if we do that. And so she thought it was a great idea, having the manufacturing plant with the childcare and all the things. And then her next question was, what are you going to manufacture? And I said, I don't have that yet. We're working on that. And she said, I have an idea for you. And I said, what's that? And she said, I can never take a big girl bath. And I said, what do you mean? First of all, what is a big girl bath? She said, it's the one where you're sipping your wine and reading your book. And I was like, okay, why can't you take a big girl bath? And she said, because when I'm relaxing, I'm drowning because my feet don't reach the end of the tub. And so we did some research in the market. And sure enough, there was no product out there to solve this problem for half of the population of women who are shorter and love taking baths. So we developed a product that would fall into that category. We built a brand around that called Big Girl Spa Essentials. And that can be found on biggirlspaessentials.com. And we have a whole bath line of products. So we've developed bath salts and bath teas and body products and candles and everything that goes along with taking care of your body in a bath. We have that product suite with that.
I have to admit, I had not considered that as an issue to be solved. So there you go. What I really heard there, however, was a process. Mm-hmm. And so could you talk a little bit about, and of course, drawing upon your experience as an entrepreneur, the process you have to get an idea, to do the research on that idea, to develop it, and then take it to market. Can you just walk us through, if I ask you to counsel me or one of your potential clients on that process?
Yeah, absolutely. That is a fun process. It is an arduous process. There's a lot that goes into it. The first process we do is I have three partners. So I have a patent attorney partner, an engineer, and a product design person. So we sit down at the table together and look at ideas and say, okay, first of all, we have three criteria that a product has to meet before it's worth the investment. One is it a widespread problem, right? Is there enough people that have this problem that we can actually sell the product and have a business wrapped around that or a brand wrapped around that? The second one, is it patentable, right? Because it's a lot of work to bring a new product to market. And if you can't have that protection around that product, then it can be taken away from you really quick by a bigger business that has a lot deeper pockets than you may. So is it patentable? That's the next thing. And then the third one was, can we make it at a price that we can then turn around and sell it and make a profit? So we look at those three criteria. If it checks the box on each one of those, then we go into the next phase, which is research. How many people do have this problem? Will people buy a product like this? Does this make sense? We use a lot of surveys. So we'll send out surveys through our social media and just say, hey, if you love taking baths, will you take this survey and answer some questions? So did the market research and that sort of thing. And then the next one is the engineer coming up with a design that will work. Just how do we give people a platform where their feet will reach so that they don't fall into the bathtub? What does that look like? And so then the engineer comes back and says, here's a picture of what I foresee, how we can solve this problem. Then the design person comes in and says, yeah, that's ugly. Nobody's going to buy that. So we have to change the way it looks. So we have to make it look attractive. And so it goes through that process. Once we figure that out, then we make a prototype. The prototype is where we just go out and find products that are off the shelf that kind of mimic what we're trying to do. And we put it together. So we literally found a wooden dish drainer, one of those wooden dish drainers that sit like this. And we broke off one piece of it, and that became the platform for the footrest. And then we attached bungee cords to it with suction cups and started testing it out to see if it would work. So that's the next phase, is prototyping and finding a design, something that will actually physically work. And then once that's done, then it goes into actually building the product. And so we have a 3D printer. We also have a CNC machine. So the engineer makes the parts, and then we print them and pull it all together. And once we pull it all together, then we again get it out to friends and family, friendly people, and say, hey, will you try this out and fill out a survey? Let us know how this works. If you like it, if you would buy it, and if you would buy it, how much would you pay for it? And going through all of those questions just with a test market. And then once we get all that established, then it's creating the brand, right? What does the brand look like? What's the name for the brand? What is the style of the brand? What is it? What are the colors of the brand? And that's where the design person comes in, and she develops all of the pictures and the logos and all of the things that go along with the brand, the packaging, and all of that. Then we find, for the packaging, we find suppliers who can print the packaging for us. We do the manufacturing ourselves. If there's pieces and parts that we can't manufacture, then we have to find sourcing for those. And we bring all of those pieces together at our assembly plant. And then we assemble it here, box it up, and then we ship it out. So then we decided to go with Amazon for this product, just because they already have a customer base. And so we went with Amazon and just put it on Amazon. And we literally started getting orders right away. People were searching for this problem. So searching for a solution to their bath, they're looking for a bathtub footrest. That's the majority of what's being searched for. And so we ended up selling an average of one per day on Amazon just through organic searches. That's the process of getting it to the marketplace. Then there's a whole nother process for sales and marketing and getting it out to the customer.
I love the process description of that, because that's really close to what we do in the corporate world. We say different, we have different terms for it, but it's really exactly the same. It's assessing the opportunity, doing the research, putting together strategy to take advantage of the opportunity, testing it, building it, what we would call monitoring, and getting the feedback, and then continuous improvement as appropriate.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Pretty much it. Are you doing this, the assembly and packaging, in North Texas?
Yes, we are, right here in Sherman, Texas.
That even makes it better, because now we're buying American.
That's right. And that was part of my goal when I started this company, was to bring manufacturing back to the States.
So you're doing your own reshoring right here.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Now let's turn to the heart part that you started with, which is about your workers and how you're trying to show that you can have a workforce that you not simply care about, but you actually provide some of the things they need to be in the workforce. Could you talk about what you provide at your manufacturing plant in North Texas?
Yes. The premise of this really is, we live in a high stress society. A very high stress society. And if you have challenges like being a single mom or a single dad, your challenges are even greater. And the stress is really high. And what we found is that when the stress levels of humans is at a high level, like on a scale of 1 to 5, if it's at a 4 or 5, the smart part of our brain goes offline. And so if you have an employee who is struggling with childcare, or who is struggling with having food, or is struggling with relationship issues, whatever they have going on at home, it is impacting them at work, especially with the stress levels being so high across the board. Our tolerance is a little bit less than it used to be. So if you have employees that are high level stress, having some issues personally, they're coming to work without the smart part of their brain online, the cortex. And so that it's impacting your productivity, it's impacting your business in enormous ways. And so what we do in our philosophy here is, we wrap support around people so that they don't feel like they're just doing it alone. providing things like childcare is a great stress relief for single parents, any parent, but especially for single parents. Providing food, it's just taking one more thing off of their plate that's already overwhelmed and already in a high stress state. So we provide those things just to get their nervous system calmed down so that their smart part of their brain can be online when they're at work and can be present and can be focused and they can actually start thriving as opposed to just surviving. I think we have a lot of people that are really surviving in today's world. So we want to create a space of thriving where we're not alone anymore. I was at a think tank, and it was a think tank where it was a group of people, and there were people from, this was a process. This was a whole process. You would love this. They had people from the police department, people from the mental health market, people from the education system, people from the medical field. They had all of these people and then business owners in one room. There was like 70 people. And we were talking about the mental health crisis that we're facing and how do we overcome this and how do we bring more resources to the problems that we're facing. But what struck me right in the beginning was when they were doing the introduction, the person that was there, that was the research person that had pulled all this together, she said, there's really a big driver that's really driving this mental health crisis that we're facing. And that one driver that is really impacting a lot of what we're seeing is the culture of self-reliance that we have built as a society. Our society values self-reliance, but we are humans and we are made and built for connection. Not one person has every aspect they need to thrive. We need other people. Like, I'm really good at business, but I'm not really good with other things. And so having other people in the business with me to help offset where I'm weak. So when we come together and we collaborate, we can do a whole lot more. But that's how we're built as humans. But we've created this society where we're saying it's more valuable to be self-reliant. So don't rely on other people and build this wall around yourself. And what it's doing is it's creating more stress for people. So our culture in our business is that it's not a culture of self-reliance. It's a culture of interdependence where we help one another and when we care about what's going on in each other's lives and we build support around that. And I'll give you a perfect example of this. I had an employee who was struggling with focus. He couldn't focus. He was missing tasks and not getting work done. And it had started, it was real recent. This wasn't a long-term problem. This was a real short-term problem. And so I went to him and I said, hey, what's got you stressed out? Because I realized his smart part of his brain is not operating right now. There's got to be something stressing him out. And when we drilled down and found out what was going on, he was a single dad that didn't have family locally. And so he's doing everything by himself. He's self-reliant and his car is breaking down. So it's smoking every day when he drives to work. He has to put a quart of oil in it every day and it's not looking good. But he just drained his savings account the month before handling another problem with his car. So he's now at a point where he doesn't have the savings to take care of the problem with the car. And if he doesn't have his car, he doesn't have his job. And if he doesn't have his job, he can't take care of his kids. So he's in this enormous amount of stress trying to just figure out how he's going to get his car fixed and how he's going to keep his job. And he doesn't have resources. He doesn't have connections. He doesn't have family to say, hey, I'll help you out, or hey, let me help you with that. So when we figured out that was what was going on, I was able to connect him with some organizations that were able to bring resources to help him get his car fixed and to help him get back on the road. And once that was taken care of, his stress load lightened up and he was back on task. He was able to focus again.
Sounds like, I don't want to sound too crass here, but we started off saying that you wanted to have a business with heart. It sounds like to me that if your business has heart, it'll be a better business.
100%. There's so many studies that show that employees that feel connected and that feel respected and that feel valued outperform other employees by a ton. And I don't know the statistics, right? That would be something we should probably research and look at. But the studies do show that.
I'd like to end by asking you a few questions about C-Suite.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you join the C-Suite Thought Council? And what have you gotten out of it so far?
Wonderful. Okay. I joined the C-Suite Thought Council because I am leading a movement, right? We're on the leading edge of this compassionate era of business. And I've never done that before, Tom. I have never led a movement before. I have just done entrepreneurial ventures. So this is new to me. Being a thought leader is new to me. So I wanted to get involved with an organization that where there's people in the organization that have done this before or that are doing this and that can show me how they've done it and help me along the journey of taking this out into the great big world. So that is the reason I joined the Thought Leader Council. And since joining the Thought Leader Council, I just joined last month, and that was my first time at the event. I made a lot of connections, and one in particular is Sue Bingham from the HPWP, High Performance Workplace. We hit it off. She's been bringing compassionate heart-based practices to businesses and organizations for 30 years. And so she was a thought leader in this space way before it was even popular. Now it's starting to become more widespread and more people are paying attention to it more. But she has a vast, vast array of wisdom that she has gained over the last 30 years working with businesses and organizations. So she has become a mentor to me in this process, because one of the things too, not only have I not led a movement before, but I grew up in the era of business where we were told not to get close to our employees and to keep emotional distance from our employees and to not be involved with them on an emotional level. So this is new as a business owner also. How do we maintain our profitability and proficiency and efficiency and have heart in that? So connecting with Sue Bingham was a huge win for me out of the Thought Leader Council. And then meeting other people like yourself who are out there doing the things that you're doing and being successful at that and just being able to be in the room with you, being able to hear how you're doing it and just be expanded by your success.
Well, Stacey, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time for this episode, but I wanted to conclude by asking you if our listeners wanted any more information on yourself or the business of, I'm going to get it right, Heart.co,
yes.
What would be the best place or places for them to go?
I am mostly active on Facebook. On Facebook, it's stacey.renee.ceo, and that's actually my handle on LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok as well. So they can find me on those social platforms, or like you said, the website, heartprofit.co.
Well, Stacey, I wanted to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me. I hope we can continue this conversation.
Yes, I would love that.
This month, the Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored by Ethico. Are you struggling with budgeting and finance requests for your compliance program? Well, I've written a white paper together with Nick Gallo at Ethico, and we've made that available. So if you'll click through on the link, you can get a white paper on the ROI of compliance and how you can use that in the budgeting process. I know you will be able to use this white paper on ROI. Are you looking for a quick way to get some ideas for an upgrade for your compliance program? Well, I have a new podcast for you, the Compliance Tip of the Day, where in 5 minutes, you can find out a cutting-edge tip of compliance that you can implement or at least consider for your compliance program. Check out the Compliance Tip of the Day each day, Monday through Friday, on the Compliance Podcast Network.